As much as I like to fight everyone, I'm having a pretty good time here. Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad?
Okay, hey Louisa, what's up?
Hi Jake, how you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't know how to start this podcast without addressing the elephant in the room, which is
I say we make these people listen to the whole goddamn episode if they want to get any gossip out of this. And let's just say fuck it and introduce our guest and talk to Max. We have Max Collins here of famous wonderful band Eve Six. Also of a well-known mad Twitter account. And that's why we had some interest of having him on. And Max, I mean, say hello to all the Why You Mad audience.
Hi. Hi, everybody. And thanks for having me on. Yeah, been a big fan of Jake's for a while, as he knows.
This is
cool.
Welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you. I'm a big fan as well.
I'm excited about this because there's like all kinds of layers of mad that we have to discuss. I teased a little bit that you were coming on in the last episode, Max, because I was having this like meltdown about, well, it's not a meltdown, but I was having a anger moment on Twitter where I was like, God damn it. Jake made a tweet. I didn't mean to start with this, but fuck it.
Let's go right into it.
So Jake made a tweet like a week or so ago. Oh, so Max, I don't know. So you know Jake, but you don't know me. So I am a comedy fan and booker in comedy. I guess according to some people, that makes me industry. I don't think I have real power, but I'm kind of an asshole who tweets about my opinions and all that shit.
Right.
That's basically covers it, right?
One of the kind of central premises of this podcast. I'm a comic. Lisa's industry, we both don't give a fuck about a lot of things.
we both burn bridges left and right. Which is why I think we were both into your tweets, you know, when you like resurfaced and like started using the account again. And so I remember you started using the account and you started tweeting about a lot of stuff that is the kind of things that we talk about, which gets us in trouble, right? You criticize your peers, including just like in the form of making jokes about them, you know, and you talk about real things that have happened to you with interactions with industry. Mm-hmm. And it's so fascinating to see because it's actually pretty rare, right? I mean, we get a lot of shit. Jake especially gets a lot of shit from the comedy side for doing the very same thing. And he tweeted, and I want to ask you about your motivations and all of that shit, but Jake tweeted like a week ago, something like, and it was like in the middle of the night. It was really funny because I just happened to wake up at 4 a.m. and look at Twitter and I was like, what the fuck, Jake? So Jake tweets something like, my podcast co-host and I have like the same opinions about comedy and cancel culture and shit. And yet the very same comedians who like dox me and hate me and want me to die write her emails like, hey, I hope you're having a nice Sunday.
I remember that tweet. I saw that tweet.
Yeah. And I thought it was very funny, but I replied jokingly to him being like, dude, but you have like the best part of this deal because here I am with the label of industry. Yes, there's like a bunch of fake people who are so nice to me because they think I can do something for them. But very often the people that I'm like, oh, this is a real dude who gets it, are mistrustful of me because they think that I'm industry in this like traditional sense of you're a piece of shit who's trying to make money off of me. Yeah. So I like replied to Jake and I was like, dude, the Eve Six guy likes you and he doesn't like me. Like, this is proof that you have more like better people will come to you for being honest this way, you know? And like, I try to be honest this way, but it's obviously not superseding my fucking label as industry, no matter how much I reject it. So
well,
that's what I'm mad about. And then the fact that you love Jake so much and clearly are trying to steal him from me, it's had me very mad.
Right. Well, I mean, I would never dream of that. And now that we've spoken for about 5 minutes, I like you very much. So
I told you, Luis, I told you he was going to love you. And then we were just going to all be friends. She was so jealous.
I'm jealous about.
He doesn't know who you are.
Dude, because the irony is that like, you know, I think part of what made Jake and I become friends is that we're not into like idolatry, you know, like even in comedy where we love comedy, we just don't idolize comedians. And I don't think I idolize musicians or anyone else like that. But it's just so weird in this instance to have it be like literally a person that I listen to. Like, I'm just a couple of years younger than you, I think, Max. I literally listened to you when I was in high school. You know what I mean? So then I'm like, oh, this isn't fair. Like, I don't think Jake can fucking listen to E6. What the fuck? What were you in middle school?
I listened to the Heart in a Blender song. I remember.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah. No, that's funny. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm sure that like Jake's, your, you know, Twitter and just kind of ethos, the way you go about your critiques has informed mine. And obviously, because I've been following you for a while. Yeah, I do think that, yeah, there are like just these sort of, you know, I don't know, musicians, and I'm sure comedians, successful ones, have their precious pieties, and like they want to present to the world in a way that is phony, and like you can obviously see why, but I think there's a real kind of psychedelic effect that comes with dismantling that, and I think it's good. I mean, I really do. I think it's I think it's noble work, because I mean, industry in general, certainly entertainment, is just rife with absurdity and hypocrisy and just stupidity, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
So it's a great target for the ire of those of us with you know, undealt with impotent rage issues.
Right.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny because then I don't know if you saw anything about this, Max, but maybe it was going around today and yesterday, this article about New York City's connection to between stand-up comedy club and podcasts and such with the alt-right and like white supremacist people. And it was really funny. I just bring this up as an example. So Anthony Jeselnik, a pretty established comedian, this is what is so weird to me, that it's like, I want to know why it's starting to happen now, you know, because, you know, in Jake's case, Jake, I think, has always been like this, honestly, since before he had any success in anything. Right, Jake? I mean, I don't know. I think you've always been honest in your critique of your surroundings and your peers and all of that, and made jokes of it, most importantly, I think, because that's your style of communication.
Which is laudable for a young artist, because like,
yeah.
For me, you know, it took me getting like chewed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I was all too happy to sort of play the game. I mean, granted, I was really young when I got, you know, signed and all of that stuff. But yeah, respect.
I mean, thank you. I do think that I kind of have consistency here, and I feel like I have to reiterate that, because the thing that a lot of like the little alt-right dickheads will say is that like, oh, you're doing this just as an opportunity. You just realize that it's like a way to get ahead or whatever. And the thing is like, no, I've been doing this since there was no opportunity in that. Like, I don't really have the fucking temperament to, you know, to.
Yeah.
But part of that is also because I don't respect comedy very much, which I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But I don't really think it's like that. Like, I think it's kind of a lame art form. And I think that's probably, I get maybe.
I disagree with both of you, because I hear Max agreeing with you. I think that you both love your art form so sincerely that you're not willing to like idolize it and pretend. And maybe that came earlier for one than it did for the other. But it does seem to be happening backwards in comedy. You know what I mean? We're like, the older and more successful a comic gets, the more they become entrenched in like maintaining the status quo. And so then now it's like weird if any one of them stands up and says anything and like makes a joke about another comic or says, I don't think this is funny. So Anthony Jeselnik shared that article about the white supremacists in New York comedy.
Yeah.
And Big J Okerson replied to the tweet And he was just like, hey, man, did you read the article? Because, like, he was, like, sincerely, like, we're friends. You yeah. can't possibly be sharing an article that calls me a white supremacist. And it's like, dude, how do you not see that this isn't about being friends? Like, some people are stepping out to be like, hey, this is important. We need to talk about it and acknowledge it. And it's not just protect your friends and protect your ass so you can continue to be successful. Like, it's so weird. So these reactions, you know, so for Max, it's been totally opposite where he came out and he started doing this and people fucking love it. Right? Has anybody gotten mad at you, Max?
Yeah. Not really. I mean, I got some, I think Lit got a little upset, got a little upset with me. you know, I think most artists kind of took the approach of like, you know, I did get some text messages from people I haven't heard from in a long time. Just like, hey, man, how's it going? What's happening? Yeah, I got a direct message from them that was kind of had WTF energy. And then another kind of mutual friend of ours got text from them convinced that it couldn't possibly be me running the account and stuff like that. But yeah, most people have been okay, which is an interesting kind of distinction. At least, I mean, I don't know, like, I'm all paranoid now because my fucking personal Twitter got hacked today.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it was weird because a couple days ago, my phone just started glitching out and I couldn't really type. And then it was like typing words when I wasn't hitting it and like really weird shit. So I immediately started going to these paranoid fantasies of like Jared Leto having paid some hacker $1 million to fuck with me or something. So I had to get a new phone, which I did yesterday. And then today I got an email that my email had been changed on my personal Twitter account. I go look at it and it's some guy posting Ferraris with like hashtag Dubai and stuff. yeah, so I mean, you know, whatever. Who did that could obviously be anything and probably isn't some kind of.
It's hard not to get paranoid, though, because, you know, you said about the text messages, like, even for the friends, I used to get text messages regularly from a comedian who hosts another podcast, pretty big one. And anytime Jake, like, tweeted something about a comic or about comedy or about a club, this comic would text me. And just have like these pages and pages of like Jake's screen grabs and like, have you seen what he's tweeting? And does he mean this? Like at one point he tried to convince me that Jake was like having a mental breakdown and that I should get him help. And like,
oh, I got a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, and I mean, and some of it just on Twitter and stuff like that, where people were convinced I was either like I'd relapsed or I'd lost my mind or, or whatever else.
Pretty telling of our industries that like for anybody to speak honestly or like without what do you call it, like treating the art form as like this thing that you can't touch, you know?
Yes.
Then that gets read immediately as like what's wrong with him?
Yeah, you must have lost
insanity. Yeah, insanity. Mind. Yeah.
It's such an insidious thing because like mental health is a real thing and everyone should be, you know, fucking cool with their friends about it and stuff like that. But it's so convenient that when you are engaging in iconoclastry, you know, when you are challenging things, suddenly then it's like, oh, wait, I'm concerned about Max's mental health. I'm concerned about Jake's mental health. You know, it's convenient.
Yeah. It's like a sort of weaponization of empathy or something. It's like. Because it ain't that. It's like, it's more, it's, you know.
It's manipulative. Yeah, it's manipulative.
It's manipulative, yeah.
And I also think that, like, the going through your friends thing is, whether they recognize it or not, it's a tactic to try to, like, separate you from your friends. To try to isolate you in feeling and saying these things so that it doesn't, like, spread further. So I don't know. It's pretty sick, but it's just like, I guess. So what happened, Max? Like, what was the turning point that just made you be like, I'm going to get out here and start tweeting?
Yeah, no, I'm so curious.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. One thing before I forget, kind of on this is, it's been really funny to see the reaction of radio, and a lot of people think that it's probably, you know, like, it's almost like, you know, it's sort of an irrelevant target in a way, but it's like, it's the same way that you're like intimately acquainted with just the most, just brutally boring, tiresome, fakeness of, you know, the comedy industry or clubs or however that manifests. Like, yeah, you know, my band was sort of born of radio. So even though it's like less relevant now, it's still something that, that I have a lot of thoughts about, but, it's really funny. And I did like a post about this too, where I was like, you know, some of these folks, like, they're like masochists for a good cause, because like the more I shit on them, like the more they're like playing the song and reaching out to do interviews, like, you know what I mean? And can we premiere your new track and that's all of so this funny shit. So it's like, yeah, maybe that points to some humility, or I don't know. Maybe it's just, I don't fucking know, but it's funny.
I would even tell you it's like more self-centeredness, because it's kind of like that thing in comedy where like the people who like crowd work, who are just like, oh, he's talking to me. Oh my God, he's making fun of my shirt. This is awesome. This is great.
Yeah, yeah.
And
they're just like,
this is good comedy. But I think it's just because they felt like the center of attention in that situation. But you know what though? I was looking at your tweets about radio DJs, right, which were very funny, and then especially that one DJ that got mad at you was super funny.
Yeah.
But I kind of do think that the equivalent in comedy is like local bookers, because you know, as you said, your band came from radio play, so I think there was a time in which radio DJs were these major gatekeepers who were deciding who gets on the show and gets interviewed, how many plays you get, all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And so they had this relationship of power over bands that bands had to like play towards, and like even comics who have to do morning radio when they're touring are like, God, I gotta fucking put this guy and laugh at his jokes, because there is this dependency. And in comedy, it's the local bookers, which are kind of irrelevant in the same way as radio DJs, because it's just like such a small fraction of what comedy is, these like local live shows. But they're the way to get stage time and the way to get seen by bigger bookers.
But right. But the difference here is like radio still to this day is asking and expecting those favors from artists without having any actionable influence. It's not like there is no curation. There is no, they're not, you know what I mean? It's just all coming from the algorithm on high. So it's like, and so part of this for me is just, letting artists know who might be in a situation where they might be expected to play that game, exactly what it is that's going on, that you're going to be asked to literally go out of pocket. I mean, they'll, you know, sort of entice you with a couple spins that maybe they'll give you at 2 a.m. and have you make your own and pay your own way to fucking Kansas City.
Sounds like Just for Laughs. Have you ever heard of Just for Laughs?
Yeah.
Festival?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, so they do new faces. And I think until like a few years ago, like comics didn't really realize that a lot of them are going to have to pay their way to go to Montreal, to where to stay, to play the festival. And it's like all couched in all these promises of everything you'll get by doing that festival, when demonstrably it has only panned out for anything like 1 out of the 25 comics.
Well, there's also
probably gotten what they got anyway, because they were already doing it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that also becomes more true over time, right? Because I feel like Just for Laughs and like this radio, you know, morning radio fucking local DJ bullshit kind of has something in common, which is that like, yeah, maybe in the 90s that could have fucking made your career, but they're still operating like that now, as if they have the same leverage.
They still want to enjoy that kind of whatever it is, like power or prestige. It's like,
you don't do anything. You don't bands don't come out of this anymore.
You don't do anything. You like send and receive email. Yeah, it's like, yeah. But as to how this all started, my crass ambition was to sort of wake up, because we, you know, have this EP coming out, had this single that just came out, first new Eve 6 music in a really long time. So I was like, you know, I'm going to start tweeting from the Eve 6 Twitter and kind of wake up the diehard base, let them know that you know, we're about to be like active again. But that was sort of the limit of it.
But it is funny that your thought then to promote was like, I'm just going to make fun of other bands. That makes no sense. Next.
No, you know what led to that though, was I had the idea for the Virgin tweet, because it like, which was the one that started it off, which was, I was literally a virgin when I wrote the Heart in a Blender song, which is true. And it's not something that I've ever really been conscious of. Maybe I didn't, maybe it's such an embarrassing fact that that I kind of buried it or something, but it like dawned on me really early in the morning. I was like, holy shit. Because I was still in high school. I was in my junior year of high school, and I didn't lose my virginity till I was 18 years old. and I wrote that song in junior year. So I was like, okay, this is a really fucking good post. Like, you know,
ready to see those likes roll in.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, that pretty much is emblematic of the whole thing, because it's, you're immediately pointing out this insane contradiction in what's being sold.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. But also I think what touches those of us who are like nostalgic about the song, I think, because for me, when I saw your tweet, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. Cause it's like not about a specific interaction.
It's not about anything.
Yeah. It's just about like that way that when you were a teenager, you were like in love with being in love and like, when's it going to happen? And you know, that kind of love. I don't know. Where I remember completely just being heartbroken as a teenager. I could not tell you one name.
Yeah. Well, I remember her name. but yeah. And then, you know, and it did that day do, you know, pretty well for like, you know, what we were used to at the time. But I think it was like the next day when one of those huge, I forget which one, accounts retweeted it, and then it went crazy. And then I was just like, oh, this is fucking wild. This is a first. I think I'll just keep going. And I didn't know it in the way that I was articulating it to myself at the time, but you know, sort of like employing this kind of rigorous honesty as it applies to both myself, you know, the catalog, my career, that song in particular, and everybody else. So like, if it just passed that litmus of being funny, entertaining, true, I mean, obviously some of my more overt, ridiculous joke, I mean, not everything is like fact-based, but at least there's some kind of, you know, intention in there that is that's like capital T true. Then I hit send, and that's kind of been the thing.
I think that's probably why we wanted to have you on, because we do talk a lot on this podcast about artist intention in general, especially when it comes to these things of like how you deal with industry, how they've treated you, how you go about making money off of your art. And, you know, it does seem like, because even talking about this white supremacy shit today, like, you know, there's this thing that we all talk about, I guess, on the left about how, like, saying shitty things ironically leads to saying shitty things for real, right? And yeah. I think it's, like, slightly more complicated than that, because it's, like, there are people who are full-on selling out, who are just like, well, it's making me money to do chud comedy and serve this world. I'm going to do that. So they're full just selling out. There are other people who do believe this shit, right? We don't want to admit it, but there are comics who do believe this white supremacy shit or this alt-right shit, literally are at the Capitol storming and all that shit, right?
Yeah.
And then in the middle, and I think probably the biggest group, are people who just have never stopped to consider the intent of their art. So they're just like going day by day, doing the things they're supposed to, saying yes to every gig, kissing ass if it seems like the right thing to do, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And not really considering the intent of how they do what they do, or who it benefits or who it harms, or, you know, what they're compromising of themselves.
No, so, and that's it. Yeah. And that's what I've sort of realized as I analyze this stuff sometimes in hindsight. It's like, you know, if you don't fucking have love in your heart, then you're making garbage. And even if it's like, you know, whatever, with the stuff that I'm doing or Jake's doing, and the, you know, tougher sort of maybe critiques or even attacks, like, that's the thing that, I mean, I'm not familiar with the specific people you're talking about, but that's why those guys aren't funny, like, because there's there's no true north there. It's just
they're creating reactively, like in reaction around them, and not with intention or consideration.
Yeah. So who are these names that I would know, maybe, or
where people to start? We'll send you that article.
Yeah.
Although the article, I mean, we can talk about this later, but one weird thing about it is, oh, actually, maybe Max, you have insight into this. One weird thing is that the article about white supremacy and comedy was written by this guy who is a comedy journalist who writes like exposés and that kind of stuff about labor issues in comedy, harassment, all of that stuff. Like, he brings out the bad stuff. So a whole contingent in comedy hates this guy and just thinks he's very annoying, and like, he's just a fucking cop who's like policing everybody, and he's not even a comic and he doesn't even live in New York. So they out of hand just dismiss the facts of the things he's talking about because he's like not one of us and not, you know, approved. Like, who are you to write about comedy?
Right.
And obviously, I think that's wrong. You know, like, anybody can criticize any form of art and any of the social situation that art comes from. So these people dismiss it out of hand because they don't like the author, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the author, then, like, reading the article, there are things in the article that reveal that he doesn't really understand some aspects of the comedy world as it is. You know, like, so then
they get the option of throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what makes some comedy people who I think are not necessarily backing bad people, but it makes them less likely to want to side with this outsider who's not getting the story entirely right. You know what I mean? Does that make sense the way I put it, Jake?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I guess the thing that's like kind of that I'm thinking about while you're talking about Seth, though, and the critiques of him are that generally when people talk about him, they go, well, he's not an insider, and so he doesn't know what he's talking about, and so he shouldn't be talking about this. But if you're a comedian and you expose things that are going on in the comedy world, people go, but you're an insider, so you shouldn't be exposing these things because you're on the team. So which one is it? I mean, it's going to be imperfect either way, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, right, exactly.
And I think this is what I'm seeing is happening, I guess, in everything in entertainment industry, where it's like, either you have to be a whistleblower and risk everything, or you have to just go along and then be complicit in everything. You know what I mean? So I think it's interesting to watch the voices that are choosing to dissent and risk some things, you know, and maybe gain some things like you guys both have.
Yeah, I think in my case, I sort of felt like, and again, it's not like I was coming out with all these brave takes. Like, I mean, I was making fun of myself and other bands in a pretty harmless way. And I think I still am for the most part, even though I'm sure I've pissed some people off. But but kind of coming at it from the perspective of, I'm in a unique position because I don't identify at all with the band, and certainly not with like the records that I made between the years of our Lord 1998 and 2003 when I was fucking, you know, a teenager and shortly thereafter. So that's not to say that I can't like, or, you know, hear that stuff and sort of hear what's good about it or whatever. But I also certainly hear what's bad about it, what's funny about it, et cetera. I don't, my ego isn't tied to it. and I also sort of feel like where my band is, like professionally, you know, like, we're able to make a living under normal circumstances, going out and doing shows still. And we kept our publishing. So we have that as well. And it's like, I don't feel like I really have anything to lose. I don't feel like there's much they can take from me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which makes it, I think, less brave. I think if I was an artist that just signed a fucking, I don't know what a big contract looks like now, but whatever that is, you know, you're risking losing a lot. For me, it's like that song is going to be in the ether. There's no pissed off DJ can do anything about that. Like, and there's always going to be fucking, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the live thing looks like. Cause now of course we have all these like cool, credible bands who want to like, you know, do shit with us. So,
but even if
we didn't, it would be like, you know, there's always going to be the fucking, that circuit will always be out there. And as long as I can feed my kids and keep the lights on, I don't give a fuck. I don't have, you know, so yeah.
You know, anyway. I think that's something that I would say the three of us have in common. The fact that I think you've said this before, Jake, I think I certainly have, that we don't have that much to risk. Like, we don't feel like they can take much from us, you know, like, well, there's nobody in the comedy industry that can, like, what are you going to do to me? Like,
that's right. What I always tell comedians is that you actually don't get paid very much to do comedy. Like, it doesn't really pay anything. Art doesn't pay much. So when you hedge your bets and make your decisions based on like this money that you're imagining is coming in the future, or these powers and opportunities that are, you are imagining are coming in the future, those are just lies that they use to get you to do shit that they want you to do. You're free when you understand how little is actually at stake and how much you're forking over whenever you make these like completely spineless decisions.
Yeah, that's so fucking true and wise. It's magical thinking, you know? And that's what used to manipulate and control the wealth and all of that.
Yeah, and I mean that's, like, people say that sort of shit to me all the time, and it's like, I guess something I've been dealing with in talking about Seth Simons and talking about this whole fucking Nazi thing or whatever, is people go like, well, he's just a cannibal. He, you know, he consumes other comedians or whatever, other comedians, cause he's not one or whatever. And like, you know, you're supporting this like exploitation or whatever. And the thing is, what I'm describing, making decisions based not on the fucking industry member's gun being to my head or whatever, just doing, you know, what I think is right, actually does build a career for me. Like, I have more fans because of that than I would
because of your integrity.
Right.
Because you're principled. And because you're just describing what it is to be an actual artist, you know? And the funny thing about these guys, though, too, is it just seems like, is this Seth guy really cannibalizing anyone? Because it seems like these guys just keep gaining in popularity and platform size.
Yeah, no, it's the best thing that's ever happened to them, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's helping them paint that idea that they're bad boys and they're being censored and all of this stuff. But, that's why I would propose to you guys this, that I actually think it's not that, like, oh, we're brave, but I do think we should call this what it is, which is if you realize you don't have that much to lose, then it's cowardly to not stand on the side of right and to not be, like, true to your principles and say what needs to be said. Because the problem that I have is that, like, I it's not easy for me to paint artists as bad, To me, industry's always the bad guy, and artists exist in this world where they're presented with bad choices and metrics that are telling you you are or not a good artist based on how much money you make or whatever lists.
But in the music world, those things have fused to the point of sometimes being a distinction without a difference. Yeah. I mean, it's like looking around at some of these, like, quote unquote artists that I know who, like, literally hang out with, like, their lawyers and A&R guys and shit. There's anything wrong with that.
No.
But there kind of is. Where it's just crass ambition. And, like, that's not being an artist. I mean, yeah. I realize it sounds funny when I talk about this shit. And it's like I've said it to, like, you know, the guy from one of the least credible bands of the 90s becoming a cultural critic. But, it's true. And I was never good at that. I was never good at playing that game. I used to watch in awe and even envy of people who wanted to go to the industry fucking parties and shit like that. And I'm like, shoot me in the face. Like,
exactly.
I can't do it. I can't do that. And I can't make conversation with these people. I can't do it. So,
I agree with you.
It's a weird thing. It's just when it's like, it's sort of one group in some ways. And some of these artists are writers who are just writing to get a hit, and some are quote unquote artists who are the vehicle for the hit or whatever, but it's all part of this, you know, machination of, you know, the end game is capital. It's not about anything.
Yeah.
It's not about anything good or inspired or true or, to me, entertaining, but...
We all kind of to admit that most of the shit that comes out of these, like, content factories ends up being, by virtue of the way it's made, not very interesting or entertaining, but people then go, oh, well, but you have to hand it to them, they made it, you know, good for them or whatever. And that's this, like, meta thing we have with artists now, where it's just a relationship where you cheerlead them. But the thing is, this thing I'm talking about where I'm like, you have nothing to lose, so you should talk about whatever you want. The second part of this that's really been bothering me is the cannibalization thing. When people say, like, oh, you know, like, they'll accuse me of this all the time. Oh, you get into fights with bigger comedians because you're just trying to get, like, something out of them or whatever. And it's like, you know,
who do they want you to attack?
Yeah,
I know, they want you to punch down
after people who have less of a platform than you. It's like, that's such an absurd argument.
I mean, that's why I'm attacking them. It's because they're fucking influential and they have power and stuff. But the other thing is that, like, all of this implies Like, if I'm a dick for, like, attacking somebody who hosts a podcast or another comedian or whatever, that implies that what those people are doing within the framework of the system of capitalism is not exploitative and does not throw a bunch of other people under the bus. And with these fucking comedians that we're talking about with, like, their Nazi podcasts and shit, all they're doing is throwing other people under the bus by virtue of promoting all these fucking weird, you know, crypto Nazis and stuff like that. Or just, you know, just making mean jokes, which I don't have a problem with, but they are mean and they do hurt people, and then going, you know,
harassment campaigns. It's like way more than like just a joke.
Right. Some of this is like, I do have a problem with like the harassment, the doxing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then we're supposed to look at that and go, well, those people are just honest entrepreneurs on their way to success, and exploitation is part of it.
I've even seen that. I've even seen that on display when people do what they think is a defense of me. So like if someone in the replies is like, oh, you suck, you haven't written a hit since blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, people will respond to that and say, well, have you sold, you know, whatever million records? Like, you know, it's like that shouldn't be the metric for describing virtue. Like, give me a break. Yeah. It should be the opposite. It should be it should be a red flag.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Our example is always, well, mine is Rogan, because any comedy club in the country will book Joe Rogan to do stand-up, and it's not because he's good at stand-up. And not even his fans will pretend that it's because he's good at stand-up.
No, they hate stand-up.
Yeah. Terrible. I mean, it's insane to me that people find him funny. I mean, I don't know.
Well, Max, what's worse is they find him smart.
Yeah, I mean, that's way worse.
I think that was all of my questions that I wanted to wait, hold on, what did I write here? Do you know Bo Burnham, Max? Do you know who that is?
I was thinking about him.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, were you thinking about him, Jake?
Yeah,
because I was thinking about Bo Burnham in relation to Max because of the having started young with your art thing. Bo Burnham started comedy when he was like 17, and he hit it big like almost immediately via YouTube. He did like songs and videos and stuff, and he became like super huge. He was like one of the early YouTube stars, I want to say, and that parlayed into stand-up specials and touring, and so he became super famous. And then by the time I think he was like 25, he quit stand-up. He did one really great special, and then he announced that he was quitting stand-up. And the last special that he did is basically all about performing. It's called Make Happy. And the entire thing is just about the idea of performing. And if you have spent your entire life performing, then what do you have to say to the world if all your thoughts are just about what it's like to perform? You know what I mean? Like, does anybody relate to that? And so I feel like it sounds like he had something similar as you. It's like breaking with this, like what he thought art was supposed to be in the past, and so now he only directs. You know,
that's awesome, and I'll check it out. And it reminds me of a bit that we do, which is like like just talking about the narcissism of like the performer and like the guy who, you know, he just, his dream comes first, and, you know, he puts his dream before anything, and he sits his girlfriend down and tells her she's always going to come second to the band, and he's got to fucking ramble on and play his three chords in the truth for the people and EMT for the soul.
Yeah. Watch the special. You're going to like it because it's very much that. It has like, he has one whole, since he does songs a lot. He also does like stand-up-y kind of interstitials, I guess. But he has one whole song that is about this, like, the relationship between the performer and the audience. And then he's like, you know, am I manipulating you with my art, or are you manipulating me by withholding your approval? Like, I want it, so I do what I have to do to get it, but then am I manipulating you? So then he starts singing the song, and the whole audience, like, I saw this in a big theater, I saw it live, And he, the whole audience just like knew the words because of YouTube stuff, right? And starts singing along with him. And then he just like stops them and he starts yelling at them. And he's like, you see, I just made you do that. You do what I tell you. Like, I'm manipulating you. So the entire thing is just him wrestling with like, what is his role supposed to be as a performer? And then since he started so young, I think he says at one point, like, they tell you to write what you know, but if all I've ever known is performing, then what do I have to say?
Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting, like, the order that this happens to people, because so many people do their art for a long time and come to this, and some people think of this first, and then it determines how their art is done. And I'm just very curious as to why that happens, and, like, I think more artists need to be talking to each other about these things instead of hiding their fears, I guess, and, you know, just covering their own butts and living in this, like, survival of the fittest kind of thing.
Yeah, I was thinking about Bo Burnham when you were talking about the coming up originally with the tweet of just, hey, I was a virgin when I wrote the Heart in a Blender song, because he has this whole thing going on in that special and in some of his other songs and stuff where he's just talking about, like, how much of a facade everything kind of is and how, like, kind of hilarious it is that it's the fact that it is all very fake is like right out there in the open, and yet we all just sort of go along with this. So he has a song called I Am an Artist where he's just at the end of it. I just only remember the end of it because the end of it is kind of this continuing fucking whatever outro. I don't know what the fuck, I'm not a music person, I don't know what the term is, like a hook or something, but he's just yelling, I'm wearing makeup, I'm wearing makeup, I'm wearing makeup, I'm wearing makeup. And it's really funny because you never think about the fact that when someone's on stage, they're wearing fucking makeup. It's the whole point is that it's a
No, that's cool. I mean, and that's what was maybe is in some places appealing about punk rock is at least when it, you know, when it's good at its best, is that it does make an effort to dismantle some of that stuff. Obviously, if you're on the stage doing it, that, you know, you're playing the game, but and there's nothing wrong with playing the game, but like, I mean, I think I love watching a performer shit on those tropes and condescend to the audience in the best way. I think that's like, you know, not in the way of like put your fucking hands in the air, but like maybe condescend is the wrong word, you know,
like challenge instead of pander.
Yeah condescend is the opposite of what I'm saying. But I don't know if that's going on in a way. Are you guys familiar with Sleaford Mods? The band Sleaford Mods?
No.
Should
we? Yeah, you should be.
Okay.
Yeah. You guys would fucking love them, man.
Cool.
Tell us about
them. And, like, it's kind of the only thing I really listen to. if I'm listening to music, it's going to be that. And it's barely music, to be honest. It's like, it's two guys from maybe Manchester. One of them just like hits play on a drum machine and lets it go unperturbed. It's not like there's like, you know, how you might think of like beats and electronic music. It's very, very spare. And then a bass line. And then this guy, Jason Williamson, doing what's kind of spoken word in a way. It's not very musical at all, but it's like the words are just insane and hilarious and literary and like,
okay,
yeah, I'm check it out.
My favorite Sleaford lyric is, stench of piss so small, stench of piss so strong, it smells like decent bacon.
That's great.
Interesting. Okay.
But anyway, but their live show is fucking transcendent, and it's like it's both a performance and an exposition of a performance at the same time. It's weird. He's like just a madman.
That's awesome. That sounds kind of like Make Happy. which is like performing for you, but questioning what a performance is the whole time.
You know what this reminds me of a little bit? I saw a joke noise band once. It was a noise clown, and like, I think it was like a mime or something, but like, it was doing this kind of meta act with all these pedals and stuff where like, the jokes were that you couldn't really tell what was an accident and what was on purpose and stuff like that. And it was just like blowing up the idea of what even is a noise show. Cause there's all this Emperor's Clothes stuff going on when you watch a noise show and you're like, oh, this is great. You know? And it's just like, and you're like, oh, I love it. You know? And everyone's a fucking scenester. So they're all standing around pretending like they totally get what's going on and stuff.
Totally Emperor's Clothes. Yeah. It's like, I dare you to say this isn't great, and I expose you as a Philistine.
Yeah.
Like, that's the subtext.
Yeah.
Totally. So I think, you know, in general, maybe we all agree with this. Because we didn't talk about fans that much, but, like, I do think they're the third part of the problem. you know, like, you can be a not thoughtful industry person, obviously, and a not thoughtful performer. You can also be a not thoughtful fan who, I don't know, who like encourages the kind of bad art. Like, I don't know how to explain it. What do you think? Do you guys have any thoughts on that? And bad
fans? Well, I just wanted to say at the outset, fans are the worst.
See what I mean? Because there's like, you know, there's the profit motive, right? Like the capitalist thing of just like, people will be like, oh, but their podcast makes so much money. That must mean they're funny, right? But then there's also the numbers thing, right? So like, look how many followers they have. That must mean they're good at what they do. And I think we're all complicit in that of like, hate following people. And like, you know, we don't realize how much contributes to the clout of bad people,
and right? And even love following people in a certain context is an aggression. You know what I mean? Like it's all weird. Like it's all I don't know. Like for me, I've always preferred to like. I feel bad saying this with all the clubs struggling and everything else, but like. I've never really been a live music person. Like I like to listen to a it's a solitary thing for me. I want it to take me somewhere else. It's a divorce for me from the personality. Not completely, obviously, like, but, and now I forget what you just said and why I felt like this was relevant to say.
I want to actually bring something up because we were talking about fans whether there's like, you know, blame on them or morality you can cast on the fans. And I'm like, I find it hard to do that because, you know, I'm a big materialist or whatever. And I think that like, you know, when they want to control us, they try to get you fucking stuck on this weird culture war shit where you're like, ah, everyone's an idiot. I'm Bill Hicks. You know, I'm going to go around and show how stupid everyone is. And like with the masks thing, like everyone's like, you know, it's all these individual actors. Right. And that's very convenient that they want to blame individual actors. Like for instance, fans for the existence of some guy who's making a fucking Nazi podcast or whatever. Right.
Dude.
Like, you know, that's that guy's fault. It's also outside of that. It's even like this big structural systemic problem. Like why is this fucking marketable right now? There should be like other shit that's happening that doesn't lead people down the road of, you know, fucking scapegoating and stuff like that. In particular, I was thinking about this because this thing happened today or yesterday where Billy Eichner was tweeting about the new Britney Spears documentary and was saying like, you know, I feel so bad for having read all these Us Weekly, you know, paparazzi stories about her while this was happening. Like, I can't believe I was engaged in that. Then somebody responds to him and she's one of the writers from the Us Weekly. And she was like, I also feel bad because I wrote all those stories. But, you know, I mean, there was an audience for them. And so, you know, we're all complicit. And it's like, no, you are complicit. You wrote those fucking articles about Britney Spears and you're blaming the fact that people wanted to buy them on what you had to do. And like that to me, that's shoving the blame off for your.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
totally yeah. do. But if we think of the rhizome, right, like it doesn't just happen from one end. Like, it's, I'm not saying in any way fans are responsible for bad artists or bad treatment of artists or anything like that or bad practices in industries, but we contribute to it by like not being informed consumers, I guess, by not, you know, especially in comedy, people don't really, I think, explore further than like, I like this podcast, so I listen to the five comics that are on this podcast, and that's
yeah, but I know what you mean, but the fault still, the net fault lies with the fucking industry and the yeah. bad shit that's made and the lack of I mean, I guess now people have, you know, so many options that it's like fatiguing, but at least the yeah. stuff that gets pushed and pushed to the top, you know, it's it makes you dumb. I mean, I think it makes yeah. it makes people
dude, but look, watching like young comics, you know, and like get older, right? Because I think, you know, I've been watching comedy since I was a kid, pretty much since I was 17. And one of the weirdest things has been seeing comics age, you know what I mean? And with comedy, there's more of a direct one-to-one like feedback loop with audiences than I think musicians have, because you have like more of a distance between what you create in the studio, like you said, and privately, and then you put it out. Comics are actively working it out with a crowd and developing it based on their mm-hmm. feedback. So when they find themselves in this loop of like, these crowds keep laughing, so I'm going to keep doing this kind of thing, it's like this self-internalized mechanism that tells them I'm doing great. I'm going down a good path. Like, it's all fine. Yeah. And so like, I think maybe a difference is, have you heard the term parasocial relationships?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So a weird thing is you and Bo are people who have dealt with the fact that you have fans for a long time, since you were very young, for a long time now. You've had strangers up in your business asking you questions, knowing stuff about you, acting like they're your friend, being overly familiar, all this kind of stuff. But then in comedy, I'll see people who, like, they weren't used to this. So when they suddenly start to get it, to have these parasocial relationships with people, it becomes a factor in their decision making, because they're not used to just having people fall all over them like this. So yeah. I don't mean to say that it's the fans' fault, but that they're also a factor driving yeah. the decisions that artists and industry make.
And you can see the temptation. Yeah. I mean, and you really have to be fucking, I think, principled to an almost absurd degree to not fall prey to that. Yeah, I mean, I've had a parasocial relationship with Jake for like the last 4 years. So
I almost want to ask you how it started, and I almost don't want to know.
I want to know, how did you first hear of Jake?
I mean, it was just girls.
I'm trying
chat,
to
right?
remember, actually. I don't know if it was, I don't know. It must have been someone else that I followed who retweeted you or something like that. And then I just got really into your Twitter, listened to Pod Dam.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think I could just, you know, you can tell when someone is sincere, you know, and it's so refreshing. It's such a rare commodity or non-commodity. Yeah, so listen to me.
Yeah, totally. Anybody who ever wants to know why I'm friends with Jake or co-host a podcast with Jake, blowing up every bridge we can, that's why. What Max just said.
Yeah,
I mean, I think I've asked you all of my questions, but if you don't have anything else to comment on, or Jake, if you don't have any other questions, I wanted to know if you had a fun story to share with us about like a terrible experience with industry or with one of your peers.
I mean, I have unlimited questions in this regard.
Oh, go.
Like, I'm so curious because of what you've been tweeting about all these different bands and stuff. Dude, the shit you've been tweeting about, like, the Smashing Pumpkins and stuff like that has been making me laugh so hard. I keep thinking about that thing you said where Billy Corgan has like a thick accent, and it, so he says, thank you for coming to the concert. It sounds like he says, thank you for coming to the cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
No, yeah. I could pick your brain forever about this. Tell me weird shit about the 90s and people that were famous during it. What are you listening to?
Let me pause for 1 minute and take a piss. Yeah, I'll pause. Be right back. Yeah. And I got you.
Cool. We'll get a drink.
Yeah.
All right, we're rolling.
Yeah, that Smashing Pumpkins. Thank you for coming to the cancer.
That's so fucking funny, man.
So good, man. And it's like he's such a great figure for jokes because he's just so funny. He's so self-serious, you know?
Yeah. And he's like a libertarian or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. He's into wrestling. Like, but yeah, Fountains of Wayne, who, said a bunch of times online how much I love that fucking band.
I saw you tweeting about them, and I noticed you're not you said a lot of people don't believe you when you say that. Music nerds, I know, always tell me, like, oh, that band is like the spiritual successor to like the Cars and like what they were doing with shit. And like, it's weird because they're a one hit wonder, so you don't think about their back catalog or whatever. But no, I totally believe you on that one. I'm curious who's great like that I don't know about, and also who is horrible, because that seems to be like what's being exposed here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Fountains of Wayne are fucking incredible, and their story, you know, they had their debut record had like sort of a semi hit on it called Radiation Vibe, which is one of the best power pop songs, in my opinion, ever written. It's just insane. That whole record is amazing. They made that record. Chris and Adam, the two writers, were at a bar and they wrote down 10 or 12 titles. They just came up with titles on the spot. And then wrote the songs to those titles that they'd written down on the napkin drunk at the bar. And so you have titles like Radiation Vibe, Leave the Biker, sink to the Bottom, Barbara H, which off the record, I can tell you what the H stands for, but that's a fucking crazy story. So they made that record to some commercial success, definitely critical acclaim. Made their second record, Utopia Parkway, critical acclaim, no commercial success, got dropped. Then made Welcome Interstate Managers, I think on their own, which was the record with Stacey's mom on it. Adam, the bass player, is the guy who wrote Stacey's mom and wrote about half of the material for Fountains of Wayne. He's the one who just died from COVID. And also the guy who wrote That Thing You Do and had a big career writing for television and film and stuff like that. But,
oh, wow.
But Chris begged him not to, I can't talk about Fountains without geeking out. I'll make this quick and then I'll get to the fun shit. Chris, the other writer, the singer, didn't want Stacey's mom on the record. He pleaded with Adam, pleaded with the label. He said, this song's not good. It's not going to be good for our band. I don't want to sing it. He ended up relenting, and of course, it became a huge hit. and kind of like, in a way, killed their career, or at least in the trajectory their career was going. They were like, they went from the band that was, you know, being sought after for like the big festivals and stuff like that in the UK and, you know, Japan, and like to being another radio band. And so. Chris like never forgave Adam for that. The last tour I did was with Chris. It was just a solo acoustic tour and I got to know him really well. And he's like one of the funniest people I've ever known, like the fucking darkest sense of humor of anyone I've ever known. It's the guys in the fucking power pop bands that always have the worst drug problem, the worst alcohol problem, and the darkest senses of humor, like way more than guys from like fucking metal bands and shit like that. Dude, in my experience,
to prepare for talking to you, you know what I watched? I watched the other day, Dig, the documentary about the fucking Dandy Warhols and the other fucking band. It's all that.
Johnstown.
Yeah, Brian Jonestown. It's like these hippies. It's like these dorky, like melody-driven guys, but they're insane. Totally. They're so egomaniacal.
They're fucking insane. They're insane.
Max,
they're nihilists.
Do you have any stories about cake?
Oh, yeah. Luis is a big cake fan.
I love cake.
Are they horrible?
Is that bad?
You're going to break our hearts?
Well, I've heard... So we shared a tour manager. One of our very first tour managers had been theirs. And the stories that I got from him about the lead singer were that he was a complete fucking asshole.
Oh, no.
And would like... demands to be on a higher floor at the hotel than the rest of the band, not as a bit, but because his ego needed it. I've since heard from other people what a great guy he is and shit. So who knows what's true? I've never met him. I do think they're a good band.
I've heard good things of like them late, like as grownups, you know, like now. But I don't. Maybe they were assholes, or one of them was an asshole when he was younger and went through some kind of like finding thing.
I mean, you kind of have to be in a way. I mean, not to that degree. That's like some unforgivable shit to me. But yeah. I mean, I think when people ask me, like the most across the board revile band and personality. Two other bands, and it doesn't matter what genre the bands are in, any fucking working band is 30 Seconds to Mars.
Really?
And that's like, that to me is heartening because
that's so funny.
That's just
it makes you feel
worst.
Not crazy. Like it's like,
okay. It makes me feel a little less lonely in the world. I gotta say,
yeah
that's the Jared Leto band, right?
Yeah.
He's demonstrably a lunatic. So, yeah, totally tracks.
Yeah, and like a fucking fake lunatic, too. It's like it's all posturing and like dress up and stuff. Yeah. Like, and it doesn't work, you know? It's like, you know, I don't know. It's just funny.
Yeah, no, he's literally like the Joker character. He's like a tryhard.
Did you guys see that new movie on HBO that he's in? I forget what it's called, but it just came out. And it's like Denzel Washington and Jared Leto and one other dude. And Jared Leto is so bad in it, dude. It's so, like, he's so terrible that I was like, why do you do two careers badly? I don't understand.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen him in stuff where I thought he was great and stuff where I thought he was awful, but... that band's not good. I don't know. You'd have to jog my brain about other ones. I mean, I definitely have no shortage of like opinions and a lot of these bands I've crossed paths with.
So something me and Luisa were talking about before this is like she's into 90s radio rock and I'm you know, more of a fucking hipster sometimes.
Too cool.
I'm not, though. I'm into plenty of fucking mainstream shit. And I noticed last night, I think, yesterday, you were tweeting about listening to Placebo. And it's crazy because that's a big 90s, like, dorky goth band that I love. And I was also listening to that band and that song. I was like, oh, okay. No. I think I'm closer to this than we're giving me credit for.
No, that's really interesting because I wasn't even listening to the song. The song just came into my head. You know what I mean?
Interesting. Weird.
And it's a song that I know. It's a song that I'll like sound check with because it's just I'm pretty sure it's just two chords and it's bang, just so fucking bang, good.
Bang, bang. Yeah. Just that pulsing thing over and over.
Without You on Nothing, that Placebo record was one of my headphone records on I guess it would have been the like first Eve 6 tour. And I would just listen to that over and over again in my bunk. It's funny. It's like whenever, and this has sort of always been the case with the band, whenever I've told people like the records that I was listening to in high school and you know, during the time that I was writing the stuff that would become Eve 6 music, it was like, it's impossible for people to fathom that like the output was one thing. And when I was taking in, you know, stuff like, you know, I mean, I would just, me and John, our guitar player, were like just record shopping dorks who would go and buy by label, you know, Kill Rock Stars and K and ordering colored vinyl and all of that stuff before the Renaissance. And, that's what happens when you put teenagers in a studio who've never done it before with a producer who has, you know, like, I'm not saying if we'd done it by ourselves, it probably would have been total garbage in like a different way. You know what I mean? my tastes have always been, kind of not what you'd expect if you were just familiar with like Eve Six music.
That's funny, because I think that means I am a fan of your output and Jake is a fan of your input.
Like, yeah, weird.
We're both on that side, but it makes sense to me in the sense of like, have you ever heard the term a comics comic, you know, where there are comics who are like, you know, even as a booker, sometimes I would have a hard time, let's say, saying this person would be a good fit on this show or this venue because they're fucking weird or like it's too dark or too inside baseball. But yet, inside comedy people are like, he's so fucking funny. like this is an us thing, and we understand that it probably will not translate to like regular fans, but we think it's so fucking good. So then my output would be something that is more approachable, you know, that is more like likely to hit to a varied types of audiences or whatever.
Like Big Star, I feel like, is the musical equivalent.
Totally.
Of that. Like,
music nerds. Yeah. Are into
totally.
Fucking Big Star, power pop freaks.
Yeah. I also, you know, it's like, I'd be listening to like, you know, Give Me Convenience or Give Me Death and whatever. There was this band called the Mises, which was like a power pop band. Remember them?
Yeah.
And like, shit like that. But then in my car, I'd listen to the radio and I'd hear fucking Live and Smashing Pumpkins. And like, so that shit got in too. And I would publicly deride shit like that, but privately enjoy it. So,
man, but you know what's weird about hearing that, Max, is that it's such a weird reminder that musicians do consume music, you know what I mean? Because comics actually like stop consuming comedy, a lot of them. They stop watching specials, they stop staying in the room when they're waiting to perform.
It's the opposite. If you're a musician, you're supposed to be consuming a bunch of stuff to play like off of it and deconstruct it and like think about it. If you're a comic, you are told by other comedians what you're supposed to do is shut it all out, because what you're saying has to be original and has to be uninfluenced by everything about you, but it's around you. But it's so weird because it's such a social fucking art form.
Well, it's also why a lot of people end up picking the low hanging fruit all at the same time, because you're not listening to the chamber that you're in, so you think you're having an original thought, but it's not fucking original. So it's like a disservice, I think, of how comics do their art, you know. So strange to hear and be reminded that like other artists listen to their or like their peers, whether it's hate listening or love listening, you know, like at least you're taking it in and it's affecting what you do or impacting what you do.
Go ahead, Jake.
No, go ahead. You go ahead, and then I'm gonna probably close this out.
I think the way that I work now with like for instance this new Eve Six record, and we have another, this one's an EP, and we have another full length that's recorded also. I do think I wear my influences more in a more apparent way. And as I've gotten older, I do see how, you know, there's a certain sort of well that I go to, that, and they're not necessarily bands within the same milieu or whatever, but, you know, certain bands and records that always put me in that reliable fugue state where I feel inspired to make something. I'm not one of these people who feels like I constantly need to be listening to new music and listening to what people, I don't care. I just want to like make shit that makes me, I don't know, entertained. by myself.
Yeah.
I think we have to let you go. I don't want to keep you for too much longer. Thanks for hanging out with us. Open invite, man. Come back anytime, because I feel like
I'd love to.
I want to pick your brain.
Whenever you get mad or you have any fun stories, you're welcome to come. Jake, are you going to plug the new single?
His new. I was like, I don't have a new single.
Not your new. Stupid.
Let me pause here.
Yeah, I could do it. It's called Black Nova. It's great. It just came out last week, so check it out. And then also, you can follow Max at Eve6. Right, that's the Twitter handle.
Yep.
And we'll also add more information. Is there anything else you wanted to plug, Max?
No, I think that's it. But I wanted to say real quick, I think, Jake, you might be friends with some good friends of my girlfriends who are named what again?
Lillian Devane.
Lillian Devane?
Yeah, why do I know that name? Yeah.
From they Austin? Have, or from what?
Front of House
podcast.
Service industry podcast. I know Lillian Devane. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they. This is my girlfriend, Lizzie.
Hi.
Hello.
They reached out to Liz and were, because I guess they saw me tweeting about you and they were like, wait, what? Like,
Max. Oh, that's crazy.
World's colliding.
Yeah. Damn, small world. I'll
Power
have to
Man 5000 reference.
No, this has been a total fucking pleasure, and you guys are both awesome, and thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great talking with you, Max. Thanks.
Yeah, man. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye.
Talk soon. Bye.